another conversation about life and witness in the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Over the last few months, I guess we've been trying to tell the story of congregations across our denomination as they've wrestled with, well, all the current challenges of lockdown or cope with the changes and develop fresh practices and also considered how to step forward beyond the initial phase. And it's been brilliant to chart the journey and hear from such a wide range of contributors. And so thank you to everyone who's shared in the podcast so far, and also to you who've listened along the way. And this episode marks the end of this particular series of the podcast, and so whenever we return next month, we will begin a new series considering ways that we are being refined by God in this season. And there'll be a couple of minor tweaks to our format, but the general idea will remain the same. So to stay in touch, make sure you subscribe to receive those future episodes. Now, before we explore this week's theme, we've been sharing some stories that have been shared with us, and we have three more that have come our way this week. And I guess these give us a little snapshot of what's happening in a variety of places. So James O'Neill, the assistant minister in Meath, shared this. He says, "We're running Christianity Explored entirely online, and the materials are accessible via Bible Mesh for free. We can use Microsoft Teams to host discussions, and we can use screen share to watch the videos. Overall, we're praying that we might be able to use it to connect with those who began to watch our services over lockdown." And then Chris Thompson, a member of Waringstown, but also acting National Director for Youth for Christ in Northern Ireland, got in touch with a story from their ministry at this time. The team at Ballysullen Youth for Christ took this opportunity to visit the home of each young person who had been through the doors of Junior Drop-In during the last year. It was such a blessing to meet many new parents and families, with lots of the visits lasting several hours as families welcomed them in for tea and socially distanced buns. Our YFC teams want to be the aroma and presence of Christ in their community, so it was amazing to be able to do that in homes up and down North Belfast. So a great snapshot, I guess, of an opportunity in youth ministry at this time. And this came from Dave Leach, who's minister in Union Road in Lecumfer and also a previous guest in the podcast. "As a church, we are keen to restore the helpful rhythms of church life, especially on a Sunday, after many months behind or in front of cameras. And so from the first Sunday in September, we've been encouraging families, couples or individuals to meet up and watch the Sunday evening service together. The idea is simple: meet up, maybe with someone in your home group or someone you haven't seen for a while, watch the talk, and two or three key questions are posted to start discussion over a cuppa. We hope this will re-engage many who have felt cut off from church life, as well as restore some much needed fellowship around God's word as we gather with God's people." So thanks to Dave and James and Chris for that, those snapshots. Now, over the past few episodes, we've tried to tackle some specific issues that might be particularly important right now, so such as mental health or leadership or youth ministry. And today we're considering our engagement with social media, both personally and as churches too. Obviously, this is something that many congregations have needed to explore in new ways in recent months, and perhaps we've discovered fresh opportunities with it, but maybe also some frustrations too along the way. So to help us consider what lessons we've learned or how we can balance this going forward, I'm joined today by three individuals who each have some experience and also helpful perspective to bring to this conversation. So a big welcome to Rebecca McConnell, John Graham and Jamie Nish. Thanks for joining us today, folks. Why don't we just start by getting you folks to introduce yourselves and maybe telling us a little bit about what you do and maybe the church you're part of as well. So, John, do you want to go first?
Sure. Thanks, Rick. My name is John Graham, and I'm the Assistant Minister at Hill Street Presbyterian Church in Lurgan. So I'm a Portadown man who had to make and cross the great divide between Portadown and Lurgan, but it's been great and wonderful, and I'm really thankful for my time there.
Brilliant. That's cross-cultural mission, John, is it?
That's exactly it.
Jamie, what about you?
I'm Jamie, 30 years old. I live in East Belfast, married to Lydia, and I work as a creative associate between Cromarty Presbyterian and then Central Belfast as well.
Brilliant. Rebecca, what about you?
Yeah, so hi Rick, I'm Rebecca McConnell, and I'm a member of First Roof Ireland Presbyterian Church in County Down, and I am a PR and social media consultant, and I've been freelance for the last 9 years.
This is obviously the area that you work in. What have you been observing about maybe general engagement in social media at the time, and particularly maybe on how the church has been engaging with that as well?
Yeah, well, I've been really impressed by what churches have been doing online, the different ways that they have, very creative ways that they have communicated not just to their members, but to, I suppose, communities, people that were engaging more online because maybe they were housebound for once, and maybe there was a bit of fear about as well. So maybe what the church was saying could help. And so there's a lot of testimony shared, and there's a real power in testimony. I think that's really important. A lot of Bible devotions and in general a strong presence across social media. The thing is, even working in the industry, it changes all the time. So when I started in PR, you know, Facebook was there, but it wasn't a huge thing, and Twitter wasn't even there. So, you know, you're constantly evolving and learning, and how the platforms change as well. There's some great examples. Just mention one, First Tramara, who had a 1-2-3. So that was a minute of Bible reading, 2-minute testimony, and a 3-minute praise. And I thought that was really good. I'm not musically minded, musically talented at all. So I think a collaboration of people sharing God's word and sharing what God has done in their life and praising him, I thought that was a really very simple way, but involved then if there was different people in the congregation and didn't all just fall on the minister to be putting out those devotions as well. So I thought that was a really creative and simple way of doing that. But yeah, I suppose as has been the case throughout your podcast, Rick, different times of lockdown has changed as we come out of it now and as churches go back. And you can see maybe there was a bit of a break over the summer. So people are getting their thinking caps on again about, we'll probably talk about it later on as we look forward as well, the challenges in different seasons coming up in the church calendar as well.
John, what have you observed?
I think it's been great. Same as Rebecca. I think so many churches have now entered onto the world of social media, and that has been great because we need a digital face as a church. I think our churches need a virtual front door, and that's been really, really helpful for lots of congregations. And we have found it really helpful at Hill Street. We were hoping to launch some new discipleship material, and we were going to split people into little groups of threes, and we thought, oh no, we can't do this now because of lockdown. But we decided to get the young adults on board, and 50 young adults signed up for it, and they were able to meet on Zoom in threes. And it was a 40-minute study where they would share together, study the Bible, what they're learning, and pray together. And we found that incredibly fruitful.
I like that little phrase, a virtual front door. I mean, I suppose over the last few months, there's probably been quite a journey for many. So there's been both massive increase in digital engagement, but there's also maybe some signs of digital fatigue. So Jamie, how do you think we can discover a digital balance going forward?
Well, I feel like the digital balance is very similar to the way you would be in your normal life. That if someone, you know, goes to midweek, leads the GBE, goes to their Bible study group, serves in 2 areas on a Sunday, eventually they're going to become tired and burn out. And I think that obviously in time you learn. When we started this, though, it felt like people wanted to do as much as they could. So we had some communities doing a pre-Sunday, like a pre-church meet, and a meet after on a Wednesday. So I think it's important to make sure whatever you're doing fits in to your routine well, even though, you know, it felt like maybe people didn't have as much of a routine, and that it's not drastically different to your normal life. But the real difference, I think, with it is that you don't have the relief that you get when you're one-to-one contact with people. So you get that interaction with people, and then maybe sometimes less can be more as we're moving ahead, you know.
There definitely has been a sense of fatigue. People started out really keen, and it was great. And very quickly, we started to notice that this was tough. And I think for us, what we've tried to do is try to set a rhythm in place that doesn't overburden people. So it's flexible if we can be. So we try to produce things that are shorter, that are snappier, that are more engaging than putting out lots of long things. I think shorter bursts work well. It's a little phrase, less can be more, right? And I think, especially if you're a congregation and you're listening and you're maybe starting out in this process of engaging with social media, the key is not to over-bombard people. If you put up too many posts, people will switch off, they'll scroll past, but actually putting out one really good post, one really well-worded post with a nice image once a week can work so much better than putting out maybe 5 or 6 posts, because people just start to scroll on past.
Yeah, I agree with that too, John. You have to give people time for the posts to for people to digest them almost, and if they say, oh, who would that be appropriate for me to share with or tell so-and-so about. I mean, I was at a conference last year in London about digital ministry, and one of the speakers there was Facebook's head of faith-based partnerships, and that's a lady called Nona Jones. So her role came about Mark Zuckerberg, the founder, he changed the company's mission to focus on building community. And in doing that, he'd realised he'd overlooked one of the most meaningful communities on earth, as we know, as the church. And so Nona Jones was hired specifically to look at faith-based partnerships. And she was really selling Facebook groups, saying that there may be an underused type of communication. Churches can have a public page, and then they can split in and have a page that's a group that only members can see what's going on. And they, so as the church would invite them in, and you would be able to say, well, yes, they are a member. And it's to build that community of discussion. Maybe people feel more comfortable leaving comments on a more closed platform. So that's maybe if you're a church listening or, and you're not sure what to start with, maybe a Facebook group alongside a Facebook page. And again, you don't have to post every day. PCI have been creating all sorts of content. Obviously, the podcast is one thing, but blogs and daily prayer points and different resources and videos. And those are available for churches to either follow the PCI page and share, or just share straight off from the website. So, you know, that's a really good way of having content, but you're not having to think of it yourself, and that can take the pressure off your own content generation.
Rebecca, just to say, I think that's really good about the community stuff on Facebook. One thing that we have found helpful is we set up a little MailChimp, which is another new word maybe for some people here. But
so go ahead. What is MailChimp? So,
well, you could go on and pretty much you can put all of your congregation's email addresses into this database, and then you can select which or how many people you want the email to go out to. So if there's maybe a closer circle of people, say the committee, or if it's the whole congregation wide, you can select that, and then it pings the email out to everyone, so you only have to send it once. And you can send a trial run as well, which is always really helpful to make sure that you've got the words right. But that's been great for us, getting key information out about prayer meetings and having that sense of community, I guess, a little bit more, plugging people in. So it's been really helpful as well.
Yeah, and interestingly, actually, I heard of a church a couple of weeks ago, whenever they were kind of returning to Sunday worship, wanted to communicate with all their members, and they were thinking about sending out letters. And actually then suddenly there was a cost involved in terms of the amount of families and homes. And so they decided to put a Facebook post up and collect email addresses. And they reckoned they got 75% of the congregation as an email address. And so just even costs were totally cut. And they used the kind of email system for that too, John. Rebecca, you used the phrase digital ministry, which I'm not sure was part of that many people's vocabulary in the PCI maybe about a year ago. I'd love to pick up on that a wee bit, but I'm just wondering, whenever we're using social media, when should we be using it for information, or actually when can we be using it for ministry? And I suppose maybe linked to that, as we use social media, when, how do we determine what things are public and then what things are private or shared?
Well, social media can be a form of ministry. It's a method of communication. So, you can, as you say, use it for announcements, the service and so on. So I suppose whenever the doors of the church were closed, you know, you couldn't invite people in. So that's where videos came up, popped up over and over and again to sort of say, you know, this is a few of our stories. So, yeah, it's that mindset of, I suppose some of this comes down to timing as well, because there's obviously a lot of things involved in a minister's time. And I suppose it's having a team that can maybe look after social media, but you can't just leave it to maybe younger people to do it. You know, if you want to have, like anything, a thoughtful approach to it, then you can see it as ministry if you see the potential in that, because you're sharing God's word. And yes, it's not like a small group where you get to interact and feedback. So yeah, as you say, there's times when things are better as public. So for example, if you're on your Facebook page, your Sunday service could go out on your public page, but maybe your midweek prayer meeting, you know, you can use that in your closed group. So that might be one example of that. But yes, just, you know, one of the things the conference focused on was inclusivity and how social media has a role to play. So we all have felt what it's like to be like with no fellowship when we've been locked down. And that should give us a better understanding of people who've been housebound for years and haven't been able to attend their church. And we should have more empathy and understanding and include them in a way that is appropriate, safe and meaningful. You know, so we'll hopefully come out of this better approached for maybe people who are elderly and housebound, you know, and that's a ministry to them, because they maybe have got a CD through the door. It's thinking of how can we make them feel like they're still part of the church family, and maybe now as churches open their doors again, can we get videos of those people reading a Bible verse in their home and use them into the church? So they, you know, it's a two-way system for them. So yeah, there's lots you could say about digital ministry, but it's just having that mindset that you're in touch with people, and you know, how do you use that opportunity? Do you just use it to say, come in, come to our services? Or do you explain to them, you know, okay, you might be nervous about coming in, so here's a little bit about what church is. And I guess that has been, as I said, the virtual door has been open this year with the pandemic, and there's been a great opportunity, and hopefully people will start to see social media as being a, you know, a form of digital ministry.
I think for many people, the way that we use our social media or digital platforms, it's kind of like a little hammer and chisel. It's the way I describe it. And we all try to carve ourselves and produce this best image of ourselves. So we put up our little Instagram pictures of the North Coast or whatever it may be. And those things are all really good. We're sharing people. We're being vulnerable a little bit with our lives. But then the challenge comes, well, if we are Christians, then how can we use this to glorify and exalt the Lord? How can we use it for his fame and to declare his excellencies? And I think lockdown and the pandemic has presented an opportunity for us to do that in a way that we wouldn't have before, that people are hungry and thirsty for meaning to life. And I think this presents us with an opportunity to share on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever platform we're using, just something of ourselves, that we're Christians. Maybe it's a verse, a little thought for today. Maybe it's an encouraging blog and we link it through to our profile. Maybe it's even just putting up a little question on our Instagram saying, how can I pray for you? Is there anything that you would like me to pray for you about? And just inviting people to have that conversation with us. We're sort of saying who we are and hoping that that'll draw responses from people. So I think that's been really effective for lots of people who've taken that step.
Brilliant. And I mean, all of this so far from all three of you has been very positive. So, you know, there's lots of positivity around social media. What about the voice of someone listening who might be the skeptical voice, who says, you know, things like Facebook is negative or social media is harmful, it's actually a waste of time, it's not proper? What might you say to some of those people?
Yeah, I think that whenever something's unknown, it can appear frightening for some people, and they've heard bad stories about things that happen online. But I think it's vital, actually, that we have an online presence now. So if for us in Lurgan, if someone moves into Lurgan and they type in churches in Lurgan, we got to be there, because if we're not, they're never going to come and visit us. So even to have a really basic website page, even if it's just a homepage with your time of service and what's available during the week, is crucial, because we need a digital front door. We have to be present. It's our face. It's the thing that people will connect with first. So if you are skeptical and you're listening and maybe you're an elder or you're in your church and you don't have an online presence, yes, it can be frightening at the start, but it is worthwhile. We have, during lockdown, we have connected with two new families that we had no contact with that live locally in Lurgan. Never mind all the other people that have watched it quietly. And we know of lots of stories of people doing that. So we want to reach people with the good news of the gospel. Surely we, as Christians, believe we have the best news ever. So we want to get it out there. And it's worth it. It may seem frightening at the start, but it's definitely worth it.
Jimmy, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I think I agree with all that. I think sometimes we think of it as a generational thing, but actually I've seen some younger people than me also having issues with what they, you know, have or don't have in terms of social media. And I get that, because it's like a microcosm of the world around you. So the internet is loud and it's filled with opinions and it's filled with good things and bad things and things that scare you and things that encourage you. So I understand that. And we have also spent, like even here at Central, we've spent so long talking about community as something you do face to face. And like, you know, Judah Smith does the online church and we're like, everyone's like, that's not church. And then we're all scrambling to kind of catch up. So I totally get the reason you would feel those elements. But I guess the idea is that if it's a place for all voices, and that's the way it is now, we should have one there. And I don't think it's the place for big blanket statements, you know, or theological debates. But I think it's a great place, like you're saying there, to introduce people to who you are. So I think you have to be really careful about what you're doing, because when something goes out there, it doesn't come back. But I just think, like, you know, why would you not have your voice in that situation? Why not allow your face, like you're saying, to be seen having that front door? It's not a lot to do, and it could make a big difference to you or someone who moves into your neighborhood, you know.
Rebecca?
Yeah, I mean, Facebook can be, social media can be addictive. So if ministers are in control of it, they do need their time away from it. Maybe choose one or two outcomes that you want to measure. And I suppose it's just the attitude you come to it with. So it's being thankful for those who do engage with you, and just been praying that, as John says, people that have been brought into the church family, that, you know, God works in many ways. So why not through social media? Just if you are skeptical, go on a social media platform as yourself. Find out what people post and get a feel for it. You know, I have to talk some of my clients through that because, for example, one that hadn't been on Instagram, and the more she went on it herself, and then she got confident to put on her business. So sort of slow steps, I guess, and not being too bogged down in the big statistics, and just trying to have a thankful attitude that, you know, as John says, you're getting the gospel out there, and just pray that God will use that and speak to people in ways that they haven't been spoken to before.
And I was going to say, it might be a bit of pressure for one person to take it on. So it might be good if in a church, two or three people, four people get together, there's a little bit of oversight and accountability, and therefore the burden shared. Yeah. So that one person's not afraid of sort of stepping outside the mark and posting something they shouldn't.
That's helpful. So I need to be present, but also I need to be wise and discerning with it, and maybe adopting a kind of team approach in that as well. Let's begin to look forward. There are continued opportunities for us to be present using, you know, various forms of media. I guess, how can we be ensuring our engagement is both positive and effective? I guess, what might you say maybe to individuals about their personal engagement, and also what might you say to a church about how they can be engaging going forward?
I'm from a rural area, a rural congregation, so Harvest is massive for this community. There's harvest suppers and different praise nights, and, you know, normally you just don't go to your own harvest, you go to neighbouring churches. So that's a big season for church to be thinking about. So now is the time to sort of think forward to those services that would normally be happening in October. Farms, you know, have so much creative content at your fingertips. So, you know, I've already heard some stories through the podcast, Rick, of, you know, people using holiday Bible clubs hosted on farms. And that's a great way of being creative. And obviously, is it too early to mention Christmas?
No.
So, you know, the big, apart from Easter, the biggest time in the church Christian calendar. So how are we going to mark that this year when we won't have the same festivities as we normally do? I just want to mention here maybe something I did with the PCI a few years ago, Christmas Means More. And we just asked a simple question to different people who had a busy job at Christmas time, and it was, what does Christmas mean to you? And it was an opportunity to tell people about the birth of Jesus, and those were recorded and issued out. And that's a simple question that you can be asking different church members, just to record at home why Christmas means more to them. You could ask them their favourite carol or Christmas song, just as a means of online outreach, because obviously times like Christmas and Easter, you know, people are more curious about the church. So that's just something in terms of looking forward to those seasons and the opportunities to be creative. And as with most social media, if you can try and plan a little bit in advance, then that will do justice in the long term, and you don't feel like you're on the back foot. So have a wee think, and as John said, involve a team of people and get more ideas together and see what can be done.
Jimmy?
No, it's funny, I never actually thought about particular holidays in that way, and it never struck my attention. I've been thinking so much, I feel like we've been playing catch up for quite a while despite trying to be on the ball, that I feel like now I'm making these contingency plans. So what if we go back to fully online? What if our communities are shuffled, like we went from a bigger group to down to six again? And so those things are always changing. So I've been trying to plan ahead for a bunch of different scenarios and fail to think about those individual events. So if we're talking about churches that haven't got anything yet, it's really important that what you have is manageable or micromanageable. So don't aim for something that is you can't maintain. Don't aim for something that someone else does. I think that's been a risk during this whole thing of the whole, I guess, what's in your hand question. Like what do you have to use and what do you have to showcase? Moving forward, yeah, I think consistency is a key in that, and I think that's created by making something you maintain. And I think the other thing that has struck me is the thing you lose when you're doing church this way is the stories. You know, you get to see people on a regular Sunday, someone you haven't seen, and something that struck them in a verse or a sermon, and you talk about that, and you get coffee before a service. And those little shared moments are actually really important in your church life. And I found myself asking the question, how do we bring that part of church into our social media life? You know, how do we tell those stories to showcase who your church is, you know, who your people are? So that's something in particular I think we want to try and do ourselves, is to share stories of how people have followed up their faith in lockdown, what's been hard, what's been good, what are we seeking for in the future and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. For a lot of people, I don't know what the future will be like. You just try and plan for your own thing. But I guess making sure that you do something that is within your remit that honestly tells the story of what's going on with your church.
I actually think it's been a really dangerous time for us as Christians because we've trained ourselves to sit in front of a TV screen in our pajamas with a cup of tea or a cup of coffee and watch church, right? So we've kind of been able to do that whenever we want. It's been on demand, so to speak. We're part of the Netflix culture where we can don't have to watch it on Sunday, even though that's a really good rhythm. But for lots of people, it's been different. And now as we maybe move into this next phase, we're only going to church maybe once every 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending on what it looks like for us in our congregation. So I think it's a really dangerous time for us as individuals. And therefore, we need to treat the stuff that's coming out online, our online content, really seriously. And I know that's really difficult for us. I don't know about the rest of the folks here, but I know whenever you're watching an online service, if your phone pings, you're just likely to lift it or you're likely to get distracted with next to anything. Something flies past the window and you're distracted and you maybe have to rewind a little bit. So I think on a practical level for us, it's really good if we can try to take notes. I find that really helpful, just like I would in church, take a little notebook and sit down from the TV. Maybe even I know of some families who get dressed up still on a Sunday and they're like, this is a little bit different for us, or they sit in a straight line, or mums and dads kind of communicating to their children like a football commentary almost, what's going on. Just little things to make it important that we still do church. We still go to church. We are Christians. And I think for us then, it's also it's a great time. I know it's a difficult time, but I think it's a really good time. It's a time to use this material that we all have. Like we have nearly, I don't know how many Presbyterian churches now put out their services online and various different things. We've got podcasts and blogs, but it's a great time to grow. And the only other element to add to it all is that we can do this still. We can do it in small communities. Now that may change, but at the moment you can do it in bubbles or households. So it can be really fruitful in the form of evangelism. You can invite other family members or friends to sit down and watch this together. I think it's the easiest time to invite somebody to come along to church. It's like you send them a link to your YouTube or to your Facebook or Instagram and say, here, do you want to come to church with me? What do you think about that? And they don't even have to get out of their pajamas, which, although it can be a negative at the start, it can also be a positive.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. And it's actually a helpful distinction to draw in some ways, John. You're saying actually, there's opportunities here of people we don't normally engage with or who don't normally engage with us. But actually, if this is all that people are getting in terms of social media or online presence, then actually we're going to miss something about how we're being formed spiritually as well for those who are maybe more mature in the faith or, you know, already part of our churches.
Yeah, totally, Rick.
Can I just add that a few weeks ago, Alan Mabin, who produces this podcast, wrote a blog for PCI, and he was encouraging the use of a survey within your church. And I think that's good sometimes to put the ball back into the court of the church members and ask, you know, okay, over lockdown, what did you like? What didn't you? And sort of ask about the frequency and the content so that committees aren't struggling just to come up with what are they going to do next? You know, have a bit of input from your church members who are, you know, receiving the content and you know, use that input to go forward.
Yeah. Thinking about practical advice that you might give to a congregation that is seeking to maybe develop or even streamline or sharpen how they engage in social media. So we've talked a lot about perhaps online church or, you know, Sunday content. But beyond that, are there specific tools or techniques or methods you might be able to recommend either for sharing information or for, you know, developing ministry as well?
I think that the overarching thing is that we want to glorify and magnify the Lord, right? So everything that we do, we need to do it really well. Shorter phrases and really helpful punchy statements are great. And pictures, just a good, clear image. So for me, I use WordSwag. It's a little app that you can get and it's really, really helpful. Or Canva. It's two really helpful things that you can produce clear, stark images on. And then if you're really into it, trying to keep your branding or your color schemes all consistent can really be something that's helpful, especially for a series or for a collection of talks. It just helps people to engage and it stands out. But again, if we believe that we have the best news in the world, this is worth doing well. So
yeah, no, I think there's so much practical advice you can offer from a design point of view. You can pick one main color, one accent color, and stick with those. You can pick a typeface for titles and a typeface for quotations and stick with those. And those are really simple things that actually, I think, make the job easier. So that can remove some of the elements of fear of trying to start something new. If you're like, okay, we have this and we stick to this for a while. So there's loads of practical stuff. And I think one thing is, if it's something you want to do better, it's really important you just ask people
what are you, like, if they see something you like in your friend's church, just ask, how did you do that? You know, sometimes we can miss that because we feel quite self-sufficient as churches, as little pockets. But there's some things that someone I, you know, might know, I'd see them do it and think, well, that's really great. I would love to know what they did. It's a constant process of learning those things. And I think it's important that we share the skills we have, if we have them. And if we feel like we don't, to ask for someone to share them with us. The other side of it, I think, is what I was saying earlier about that, you know, to only telling the story of God, is that if you have a blossoming youth group, show that, you know, if you have a Margaret, your piano player, he serves for 30 years, show her. If you know, you need to be willing to show what's going on with you. So I think it's just important to be true to what you have, you know.
And picking up on that, Jamie, I know something you tried to do in your social media engagement is actually showing the reality of church as well. So actually people, you know, so actually not just, you know, people that actually are part of the church that you're sharing, rather than, you know, some random people, or, you know, just, or not just people at the front, but actually, you know, conversations that happen, isn't it?
Yeah, especially at this time, we spent so long essentially presenting people with sermons, you know, until churches started meeting again. So you were getting almost, I felt anyway, quite battered by content of that nature, that it was a sermon. So it felt more like lectures by the end of it. And then we started doing a series called Faith at Home, and it was just interviews with people about what faith had been like in their circumstance. So what it was like living alone during lockdown, what it was like for a doctor, for someone who was on furlough, with Dave, who lost his mom during this. There's those different stories. And actually, there's one big story that brings us to each other as a church, which is the story of Jesus. And within that, there's lots of other stories of what Jesus is doing in people's lives. And I think both of those connect with people. I think, you know, the big story is what gravitates people in, and the little stories are what make them feel like family or community so often. So,
and they seem to be, Jamie, they seem to be the posts that people engage with most. You know, if you put up a picture of the youth group or of the young adults or of an interview with someone in your church, kind of like the Humans of New York initiative, that's the post that people engage with. They see a face, they click it, they like it, they'll listen to a testimony or a story because it's real, and it's showing that Jesus actually is with us through highs and lows, through the good and through the bad, and that we're hopefully all just kind of normal people trying to do life together, right? But that's the saltiness of it. That's the reality of who we are as people, just living our lives for Jesus. And yeah, I think it's great if we can do that and share that as congregations.
There's been a bit more appetite and for honesty, I suppose, from people during lockdown, when you realise you're all in the same boat. I know, obviously, as we come out of lockdown, there's different boats again. But yeah, it's, you know, that's why I said digital is flexible. Being social media is flexible. So, you know, if you do feel you've done too much, if you were doing daily devotionals, you know, don't feel guilty about it. You know, that being honest with your followers as well. And you know, just one thing that I haven't really touched on, but with all the social media buttons on our phone, one thing we sometimes forget is the call button, the real simple call button, and sometimes just picking up the phone. And you know, that's something any elders are listening, you know, it's important that they keep up their pastoral care through phone calls, because nobody's going to say, look, I'm struggling on a public post on Facebook, I've just lost my job, or I've been made redundant after furlough. So these things going forward, people will need to, the pastoral care is important. And yes, there's elements of social media are good, but it can't cover things like that. So just don't forget the importance of a phone call as well.
That's really helpful to bring us back to, Rebecca. And it just comes back to, it's both and, isn't it? It's both of these, the kind of maintaining the personal connection, but also trying to get our reach for wider, or the digital front door, as been said at the start. We'll kind of end each episode by just letting you reflect on a piece of scripture maybe that's been particularly helpful to you at this time. So we'll go Jamie, Rebecca, and then John to finish.
Well, mine actually is kind of started at the start of this. I found the start of the lockdown period quite stressful. I think being quite a social person, it was really odd to have that taken away. And I remember trying to hunt for something in the Bible that'll like reassure you. But there was a verse my mom actually used to read it to me when I was a child. I went through a period of being really afraid of someone breaking into our house when I was a kid. And she would always tell me to read this. And it's from Psalm 91, and it's just the very end bit of it. It says, because he loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation. To be honest, it was the middle bit of that. There was a lot of huge promises in that verse, but that middle section that says, he will call upon me and I will answer him. I'll be with them in trouble is one of the greatest promises to me that I can imagine when you're feeling uncomfortable or like things aren't stable in your life. That he's there, that he's bothered about what happens to you, and that whatever's going on in your trouble, he'll get in there with you and try and get you out of it. So I just remember every time I read that, I always think there's nothing wrong with that, like, you know.
Yeah, well, in lockdown, I've been really drawn to the New Testament letters as Paul's writing to fellow believers. And obviously now that that was their Twitter and their Facebook for the day. So they seem to take on new meaning as it is the living word as we experience separation from our church fellowship. And I guess even as some of the very familiar passages that are read as benedictions, you know, we miss those being prayed over us at the close of a service in a church building. So I've just chosen 2 Corinthians 1, verses 8 to 10. We were crushed and overwhelmed beyond our ability to endure, and we thought we would never live through it. In fact, we expected to die, but as a result, we stopped relying on ourselves and learned to rely only on God. And he did rescue us from mortal danger, and he will rescue us again. We have placed our confidence in him, and he will continue to rescue us. I guess as we move into autumn, winter, and just the threat of a second wave, you know, it's important to give thanks that God has brought us this far through the pandemic, and that he'll be with us in the days ahead, whenever maybe that fear that might rise again. And just those letters just seem real comfort at this time.
For me, I've been just really wrestling with Philippians in general. How can Paul say to live as Christ and to die as gain? How can he say that everything else is loss? And this has really been working on me over a number of weeks. But it's in chapter 3, it's because he says, Christ has made me his own. And then into chapter 4, and this passage is a passage that's been sticking on me, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. But he says this because the Lord is at hand. And that image of, is the way I imagine it. Whenever I was a little boy, mum or dad would have came into my room and read me a little story, maybe to try and get me to go to sleep. And in their presence, you're at peace. And with their intimacy, with their closeness, you're safe. Kind of what Jamie was talking about. You're safe, you're okay. And because of the Lord's presence and intimacy during lockdown, that's just become really precious to me. And then verse 8 of chapter 4, whatever is true, whatever is honourable, whatever is just, all of this list of stuff, he says, whatever is worthy of praise, think about these things. Just settle your heart and think about these things. Nothing else really matters, but what is pure, what is lovely, what is good, what is excellent. And enjoy your intimacy with me. Enjoy knowing that I am yours and you're mine. And think about these things, and that'll lift your mind. So that's been something that I've been thinking about over
Brilliant. Thanks to each of you for sharing with us. Rebecca, we appreciate your perspectives in terms of the work that you do, and Jamie and John as well. We wish you every blessing as you continue serving in the ways you do. Maybe before you go, where can we each find you on social media? So do you have accounts that people can follow, or where can we find you, Rebecca, for example?
Yeah, so I'm at Purple Rain PR on Twitter. So yeah, I also wrote a blog for PCI on the 7th of July, which is some tips. Sorry, I'll just get a wee plug in there.
Now's the time. Now's the time.
That's really helpful. We'll include that in the show notes, actually. That's really good. John, where can we find you?
Yeah, so I'm John T. Graham, usually on all things. And the reason for the T is just because there's lots of John Grahams. And my middle name's Thomas, so it's just to stop people getting confused.
So on Twitter, is it John T. Graham 1, I think?
It is John T. Graham 1, and it should be the same on Instagram, and then just Facebook's John T. Graham.
And Jamie, I looked up you earlier, and you hadn't posted on Twitter since October 2016.
You know what? I updated Twitter because I felt like it was a bad place for me spiritually and emotionally. So I just don't bother anymore. There's too many voices on there. I've got everything else at Jamie Ivan Niche, and I'm on Spotify as Niche.
Brilliant. There's a musician plug as well. So blog posts and musician plugs. Brilliant. Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And can also say a big thanks to Alan Mabin, who sits quietly in the background of all these conversations as well. But he spends endless hours recording and editing and uploading the podcast and removing my bloopers as well. So thank you so much. And as I said at the start, this episode marks the end of this particular series of the podcast. And so when we return next month, we'll begin a new series called Refined that will explore how we can step forward in some key aspects of our life and witness. Until then, thanks for listening.